So Alistair seemed somewhat bemused by the prospect of me giving a stewardship sermon. Perhaps it's because I'm a professor moonlighting as a priest and have never had to engage in fundraising and the nitty-gritty business of running a church. Hence, my sermonizing can float off to lofty topics of great theological import, leaving aside matters mundane, like how we pay for the new and hopefully functional boilers. Fair point. But sometimes the lofty and the mundane coincide, and stewardship is one of these points. So let's start with the basics. Wealthy ancient households had persons charged with household management and finances on behalf of the owner. They were custodians of the owner's wealth. It was not their own. In fact, it would radically diminish the steward's life expectancy if they entertained delusions of ownership. They were merely stewards of another's wealth. That is the origin of the term stewardship. So what does this mean for us? Let me begin with Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it, for he has founded it on the seas and established it on the rivers. In Jewish, Christian, and Muslim traditions, all that exists belongs to God because God is creator and sustainer. We are merely stewards. We own nothing, not a single thing. We are simply stewards of the time, talents, and treasures given to us. Let me say that again. We own nothing, not a thing. Nothing is ours by right. All that we have and are belongs to God. Now, if you've grown up in church, you have likely heard the word stewardship so often that you can be forgiven for starting to tune out as soon as you hear it. You hear the word and may be triggered to think, snooze fest. Here we go again. Instead of a proper sermon, we hear the priest begging for dough. Boring. I mean, I suppose it's a necessity, so I'll pretend to listen. Friends, stewardship is anything but boring. It is radical, countercultural, and disturbing. Can you imagine anything more destabilizing to say in a culture in which we measure self-worth by net worth than to say, you own nothing? If a whole culture, its internal logic, its modes of operation, if the entire socioeconomic system and its politics revolve around ownership, what could be more disruptive than to say, ownership itself is a fiction? It is a made-up notion. It has no reality. The central idea of stewardship is anti-capitalist, which is itself a system rooted in the fiction of ownership and wielding ownership for the sake of profit accumulation. If you think church is a safe place, a cozy Sunday morning social club for the well-to-do, maybe you're going to the wrong church. Beloveds, this is a dangerous place, one in which we worship a God who longs passionately for justice, which is another word for systems that make right relationships possible. The lie of ownership is a recipe for injustice. If I own what I own, I have no obligation to share any of it with you, save for the goodness of my own heart. By contrast, if God owns everything I have and am, I am accountable to God for everything I am and have. Now, at this point, some may be thinking, where am I? Did I walk into a lecture on economics? Isn't this Sunday? Didn't I go to church? He looks like a priest. He's dressed the part. Friends, there is no topic that the Bible talks about more than economics and money. Not sex, not gender identity, not sexual orientation, not anything. The favorite preoccupations of some segments of the Christian community barely rate a mention in the Bible. In the Bible, there is no distinction between economics and religion, because God, whose name and nature is love, cannot abide by structures of life that disfigure, demean, and dehumanize the lives of God's beloved children. Fundamentally unfair and inequitable economic structures, grounded in ownership, violate the dignity of persons created in the image of God. So unsurprisingly, the prophets speak of little else. What does any of this have to do with stewardship? Well, if nothing belongs to me, and everything belongs to God, if God is the owner, and the owner's sole purpose is the flourishing of God's creatures, then we who are stewards must ask ourselves some basic questions. Am I using all that I am and have for the sake of advancing the work of love? Are my gifts and talents, teaching, preaching, cooking, quilting, knitting, encouraging, consoling, hugging, fundraising, are all these being deployed to serve the one whose name is love, the one who bears the tender face of the Nazarene? Am I being a good steward? Those are the key questions to ask ourselves, not how much money should I give the church. How does the church figure into all of this? Why does the church even matter? The church is a community dedicated to the proposition that we belong to each other and to God. Our market society, and trust me, we live in a market society, not just a market economy. That society tries to teach me that I belong to myself and myself alone. Our market-driven society tries to convince me that I am what I keep, my bottom line. The church is a community that believes that I am what I give. Our market-driven society tries to teach me that I must look after number one, because no one else will. The church is a community that believes we are all lost if we don't look after each other and the rest of creation. The world tries to persuade me that I am who I am quite apart from you. The church, by contrast, is the community of Ubuntu. I am only because we are. Our market-driven society habituates in us propensities towards indifference. The church tries to cultivate in us our deepest longings to love and be loved, to be compassionate. The church is the community of those who gather to break the hold of the lie that you and I are not siblings. The church is dedicated to the proposition there is no one, not a single one, on God's green earth to whom I can be indifferent. No nationality, no religious tradition, no sexual orientation, no nothing that can make you anything other than my brother, my sister, my sibling. Church is just an ancient name for beloved community. That is who we are. That is who we aspire to be. Folk practicing and living into being beloved community. Truth be told, the intimacy to which the church aspires, what we are trying to become for each other when we eat of the one bread and the one cup, goes beyond what the word stewardship can capture. Here, we must acknowledge that the notion has limitations. For starters, do we really undercut the idea of ownership when we make God the divine owner? We still have lessons to learn from that pioneering feminist theologian, Mary Daly, who wrote in her groundbreaking book, Beyond God the Father, and I quote, "If God is male, then the male is God." In other words, what we attribute to God, we sanctify. So, according to Daly's logic, we must recognize that when we insist that God is an owner, we make ownership divine. Does that go far enough? There is a danger that our talk about stewardship does not suffice. There is a second danger with stewardship talk. And it is the danger best appreciated by First Nation folk. When humans imagine themselves as stewards of nature, we still imagine ourselves as in charge of the whole operation. We imagine that we are responsible for rectifying the harm that we inflicted. Does that go far enough? How's that working out for us? Against this anthropocentrism, Robin Wall Kimmerer, the Potawatomi botanist, reminds us that animal and plant kin are our elder siblings, and we are but late and recent arrivals on this ancient planet. To imagine our proper place in creation and stop harming it, we must remember that we are just one part of a larger citizenship that includes fellow creatures, our elders from whom we must learn. There are other nations, Kimmerer reminds us, such as the Maple Nation or the Cedar Nation, to whom we have obligations. So the metaphor of stewardship must be supplemented by learning that we are just one part of a democracy of all creatures. There is another lesson, more profound than the wisdom of stewardship, calling out to us from the book of Jeremiah, the wisdom of intimacy. In a daring metaphor, the prophet imagines God as a writer who takes the human heart as God's parchment. When God writes, God does not resort to animal skin as we do. That is only superficial. Only skin deep, bad pun intended. Instead, she goes straight to the heart and inscribes the law therein. Law is not to be imagined merely as a list of enumerated commandments. Rather, the law is God's will. The law is God's love made manifest as wisdom. God's law is how God tunes the heart so we know the truth and do the good. Jeremiah imagines that when the divine poet becomes a scribe of the heart, God's presence in us will become so intimate that people like me, preachers, teachers, and theologians, will become redundant and surplus to requirements. There will be no need to have someone around whose job it is to say, "Know God." Of course, that would drastically reduce the church's operational budget, but I am getting distracted and risking putting Alistair, Pam, and me out of a job. This radical metaphor of God as a writer surgeon, a divine cardiologist, who heals the heart by writing love into its tissues, ultimately undercuts the notion of God as owner. God is not an owner of any kind, and we are not his stewards. There are perhaps no owners around anywhere, divine or human. Only divine love, written into the chambers of the heart. There is only love in all, through all, for all. What then becomes of stewardship under the power and longing for this radical intimacy with the divine? An intimacy in which we live in constant prayer with a God who is nearer to me than I am to myself, a God who resides even now in my own heart. Stewardship is transformed into mutual care. Mutual care for each other, the earth, our beloved mother, and care for this, our precious, beloved community. Care beyond ownership, care beyond obligation, care beyond extrinsic measures like tithing, care spilling out into generosity, grounded in trust that we are all of us in the just and tender hands of divine love. Care that flows out into a healthy giving that recognizes that this community is precious and needs our nurturing. May we surrender ourselves to such giving for the sake of this community that we so deeply love. Amen.